Got it. Now is as good a time as any. So hello, Wall Street Zendo and Zoom people and people here at Sherbrooke. As Sasha said, my name is Claire, Joko Claire, and I've been around member of Mountain Rain for many years. And usually on Wednesdays, Michael and Kate, who are our wonderful teachers, give a Dharma seminar or a reading, and they're on a well-deserved vacation right now. So a few of us senior members have been taking turns sitting in the seat here, and tonight is my night. So I'm really happy to be able to be here and lead this reading and discussion. And the last several weeks, we've been reading a book by Kara Jewel Lingle, called We Were Made for These Times. And it's called 10 Lessons for Moving Through Change, Loss, and Disruption. And it's interesting, while I was looking for a copy of the book, I forgot what the title was exactly. And I was looking for You Were Made for These Times. I sort of changed it in my mind to making it all about me, kind of as a personal thing of how to deal with the world. And I really like the difference for title, We Were Made for These Times, because it really says that there are no lone rangers in this world, and we're all here together right at this moment.
Same.
Yeah, rather than me. Thank you.
Of course.
There we go. All these beautiful faces. So we were made for these times. And I also think in some ways these times were made for us. We can reverse it that way as well. So we've been doing one chapter at a time, and she's got 10 lessons for moving through change, loss, and disruption. And the last, I think, 7 or so weeks, we've gone through different chapters. And tonight it's one on equanimity. And the chapter is actually called Equanimity and Letting Go. So I'm going to read bits from the chapter. I won't read the whole thing. With a few comments. And then she has a really lovely guided meditation at the end, which I'm going to have us go through. And then afterwards, if there's some just time for discussion, we can share our experiences. So equanimity is one of the four Brahma Viharas, or the four divine abodes in Buddhism. And these are for virtues and meditation practices to that are used to cultivate them. And the other three are loving kindness, compassion, and empathetic joy. But equanimity is a really important one. And I've been thinking about what equanimity means, and there's lots of different explanations, but it's like being really seeing how things are, being with them as they are. And not wanting them to be different. So having no preference, not wanting things to be different than they are or to stay the same. And that can be really challenging, I think, in our world. And it's a pretty constant practice. And her chapter is equanimity and letting go. So she kind of pairs those two things together. So it begins with a poem, which I'm going to read. Full of trust, you left home and soon learned to walk the path, making yourself a friend to everyone and making everyone a friend. When the whole world is your friend, fear will find no place to call home. And when you make the mind your friend, you'll know what trust really means. Listen, I have followed this path of friendship to its end, and I can say with absolute certainty, it will lead you home. So from the poem, I'm going to read this first part. When I was a child, I had a toy called a Weedle. I should go back. If you haven't heard the other weeks, Kara Jewel Lingle was a longtime practitioner with Thich Nhat Hanh, was a well-known Vietnamese Zen practitioner. And she lived in his practice center, Plum Village in France, for about 15 years, I believe. And then the last number of years has been practicing in the Theravadan tradition at Spirit Rock. So she's got a really wide range of experience in the wisdom traditions. It's a really lovely teacher. And this book is full of really pithy things said very simply. Got a lot of good advice in it. So when I was a child, I had a toy called a Weeble. It was shaped like an egg and made of plastic. There was some kind of weight in the bottom that kept it balanced and centered. You could tip it over and it seemed like it would fall, but then it wouldn't. It rocked back and forth and always came back upright to stillness. What is it that allows us to come back to balance when the transitions and challenges of our life knock us off center? What is that inner weight at our core? I've had a toy like that. Probably most of us have or are familiar with it. You kind of watch it go back and forth. And since I've been thinking about this the last few weeks, I've had that image in my mind quite often. And as I go through my days, very frequently getting off center and kind of noticing just how frequently that happens as the eight worldly winds blow me back and forth. I've kept that image in my mind and it's been very helpful. And I've realized that often when I start to go off with something, a judgment of myself or somebody else, or wishing something was different, or that I'd got there on time or didn't have so much to do, you know, it goes on and on and on. Usually I'll start to resist that going off balance and think, oh, I just need to stay really centered and stay here and get really stuck in that. And it usually makes things solidify a bit more. But I've been finding if I just kind of let myself go and notice it, it's there's a lot more ease in the kind of going back and forth. And maybe we're not meant to always be totally upright and solid. And something about the Weeble. And then to feel into that, what is it that allows us to come back to balance? What is that inner weight at our core? And I think we're all familiar with that sense. And we can tune into that inner core that brings us back. And she goes on, equanimity is a fundamental practice that can help us to center and balance ourselves. The word in Sanskrit is upeksha, and in Pali it's upekha. Upa means over and ksa means to look. So upeksha means to look over, to see all around like from a high mountain, to see all sides. From this standpoint, we don't take sides, as we see the situation in its entirety. It can also mean to see with patience, to see with understanding and spaciousness. It is sometimes translated as non-discrimination, impartiality, tolerance, letting go, and non-attachment, which is distinct from indifference. Thay, which is the name for Thich Nhat Hanh, translate upeksha as inclusiveness, which gives us a more engaged, involved, and active nuance to this quality. So I kind of like that image. She uses a number of images in her description of equanimity, and that one of seeing all sides and seeing all around without preference is really quite a beautiful one. And it reminded me of the last little bit of the Fukan Zazengi, which is a chant that we recite fairly often in services. It's one of Dogen's, what's it called? Quite a long one. Dogen's Universal Recommendations for Zazen. And the last paragraph goes, please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not be suspicious of the true dragon. And when I first heard that, I was like, what is he talking about? But, you know, that story about the blind men around the elephant, each person feeling a different part of the elephant, and they would say what their experience was and what they thought this thing in front of them was. So some would say there's a long thing with hair at the end and it waves back and forth, and other that's a tree trunk, or it's a long thing that sprays water, or big floppy ears. So if you're just experiencing a part of something, you have a different opinion of what it is than if you see the whole thing. And they says, do not be suspicious of the true dragon. And somehow that reminded me of that part of equanimity when you can see everything. I like the next part of this too. So it's devote your energies to a way that directly indicates the absolute. Revere the person of complete attainment who is beyond all human agency. And that, of course, is us. Revere ourselves. And she goes on, so from seeing things from all around and seeing as they are, into inclusiveness. So inclusiveness or equanimity is not dogmatic. It allows us to keep an open mind. When climbing a ladder to advance to the next rung, we must let go of the rung we're standing on. We need to let go of what we know now, to be open to learning something new. The willingness to see things afresh with new eyes is an important aspect of equanimity and inclusiveness. The Dalai Lama says, "I'll give up any Buddhist belief if science proves it wrong." As central as the practice and teachings of Buddhism have been for him and his culture, he won't cling to them, because clinging prevents us from growing and moving forward. When we find ourselves in times of transition or difficulty, what are some ways we may be clinging to the current rung of our ladder? What might it be like to relax our grip and be willing to move to the next rung? Inclusiveness, equanimity, helps us trust that we will be okay, even if right now it's uncomfortable or even hardly bearable. The more we can relax and let go, the easier it will be. I like that image too about the ladder, because it's certainly true. If you're hanging on, you're not going to be going up or down. And sometimes that letting go is pretty scary. But this letting go doesn't mean indifference or not caring. It doesn't mean you don't love all your children. It means you love all your children without discrimination. It also means we don't discriminate between ourselves and others. If I see myself as the one who loves and the other as the one who is loved, if I somehow see myself as superior or separate from the other, that's not true equanimity. We can see equanimity as similar to grandmotherly love, which is more peaceful than the love of a parent because it's not as attached.
Mm-hmm.
And I can vouch for that, having been a mother for 34 years and a grandmother for 1 year. So that's really true. I really liked reading that, actually, because I went, oh, that's true. When your love without is as much attachment, there's not as much suffering. Equanimity helps us to take a longer, bigger view. Each person has their own journey, their own path to walk. We don't always see the logic of their trajectory. We can't see what it is that they need to go through in their life to learn the lessons they need to learn, to grow in the ways they need to grow. With the spaciousness of equanimity, we are able to see that this life is made up of what in Taoism is called the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. All the beauty, the happiness, the wonder, the connection, the belonging, and all the separation, the anxiety, the depression, the despair that is human life. It doesn't mean we don't try to alleviate suffering when it can be alleviated, but we touch great freedom when we can accept suffering as part of the path and not a mistake. With equanimity, we can know how not to make things worse when pain comes. We can choose not to add to the pain by resisting, suppressing, or judging it. Instead, we can choose to open to it, to allow for the fact that a certain measure of pain is part of life. Equanimity keeps us grounded and cool so that we don't burn out in our caring, in our work to relieve suffering. Without equanimity, we can outpour to an extent that we become exhausted or overly identified with the situation. Equanimity can keep us resourced and in our center. We need this coolness of equanimity because there's so much heat in the world right now, and it's only getting hotter. That was so true. And I think that's, you know, when I'm around people that are suffering or in pain, the desire to help is very, very strong. And of course, that's a good motivation. But I think being able to not be too attached to the outcome and to realize, you know, that we really don't understand that bigger trajectory or picture for each person can be really helpful. allowing that, the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. And she gives the example of, in the light of the attempted coup on January 6th, 2021, and other instances of political violence in the US, how do we relate to those forces with clarity and fierce compassion, calling those involved to justice without dehumanizing them? How do we see from all sides and include them in our hearts? Equanimity can help us not discriminate and let go of the tendency to see ourselves as separate from others. I think that's really challenging sometimes now because there's so much polarity, to be able to face people that have really different values and views from ourselves and keep equanimity. It can be really, really difficult. And she goes on talking about her teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, who was went through all the violence and political polarity in the war in Vietnam. And he kept an amazing sense of balance and equanimity and never let hatred overcome him. And she says, during the war in Vietnam, Thich Nhat Hanh said that other people are not our enemies, that a human is never our enemy. I like that, a human is never our enemy. Our only enemies are delusion, hatred, and ignorance. It is possible to uproot this in ourselves and others. If we see ourselves as beloved, not as victims, we can encounter others without malice, even when we disagree. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. offered this exhortation in his essay, Loving Your Enemies. I'm going to read this. It's a challenging passage, I think, but he was very passionate about being peaceful, encountering hatred, encountering injustice, and really keeping your sense of yourself, not getting caught up in hatred. To our most bitter opponents, we say, we shall match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. We shall meet your physical force with soul force. Do to us what you will, and we shall continue to love you. We cannot, in all good conscience, obey your unjust laws, because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good. Throw us in jail, and we will still love you. Bomb our homes and threaten our children, and we shall still love you. Send your hooded perpetrators of violence into our community at the midnight hour and beat us and leave us half dead, and we shall still love you. But be assured that we will wear you down by our capacity to suffer. One day we shall win freedom, but not only for ourselves. We shall so appeal to your heart and conscience that we shall win you in the process, and our victory will be a double victory. Be powerful. So she's saying this too is the voice of equanimity, a voice much needed in our deeply divided world. This practice of equanimity, of inclusiveness, can give us great courage. The Buddha said that when you have equanimity, you have a mind of immeasurable peace. When you have peace, you have a lot of freedom. And when you have freedom, you're not afraid. I'm just going to read the one last paragraph of her readings here. And I find it interesting just the different aspects that she pulls in under that umbrella of equanimity, inclusiveness, peace, letting go, not giving in to hatred. It says, we can bring these radiant and powerful attitudes of equanimity and inclusiveness to our own difficulty or moment of transition. They keep us balanced, so although we rock this way and that way like the weeble, eventually we come back to our center. There are classical phrases for cultivating equanimity and inclusiveness that can help us in meditation. So she's going to go through a guided meditation now to kind of use some of these. Thank you, Lorna. And I'm going to invite us all to do that. Thank you. So it's not a long one. So just make yourself comfortable however you are sitting, or just be in a comfortable place. And if you'd like to close your eyes during this, just to, there's some imagery that she uses, and sometimes that's a little bit easier, whatever is comfortable for you. So begin by taking a few moments to feel your breathing, to feel your body. Allow yourself to open and settle right here, right now. Now visualize yourself in a large open clearing or field with grass, trees in the distance, and a big sky above. Allow yourself to open and settle in this spacious, calm place. As you sit in this field, bring to mind a situation that's causing you some distress. Feel your body as you contemplate the situation. Maybe a decision you have to make, or a hard conversation you have to have with someone, or a struggle in some area of your life. And now let your challenge, your question, something that is breaking your heart in the world, your moment of transition, let it come and be with you in the field. Maybe it takes some kind of form, like a shape, a color, a living being, or maybe it's a feeling, a sound, a scent. Whatever it is, let it be there right next to you and try to get a felt sense for it. And now see a line on the ground that forms a circle around you both. The circle's diameter is just a few meters or yards across. So you and your question or difficulty are in a close space. Notice how this feels in your body. And offer yourself these wishes. May I open to this moment just as it is. May my heart be at ease with the conditions of my life. May I open to this moment just as it is. May my heart be at ease with the conditions of my life. And now see the circle growing bigger, 10 yards in diameter. What is that like for you, to experience more space around you and your difficulty? How do you feel? What happens in your body? You can say this phrase to yourself. As much as I would like things to be different, things are the way they are in this moment. And now the circle grows larger to 20 or 30 yards in diameter. How do you respond? How do you feel? May I open to the flows of joys and sorrows with understanding and equanimity. And now the circle grows as large as the whole field, and there is so much space. You can choose to go anywhere, have any relationship you wish to. It's your question. Where do you wish to be in the field? Let yourself go there. Where is your question or difficulty in relation to you? Notice how your choice feels in your body. Breathe with it. Allow whatever is here to be as it is. May I open to this moment just as it is. May my heart be at ease with the conditions of my life. And now let yourself sit in the middle of the field again. Your question or difficulty can be near or far away. Together, enjoy watching the sun as it sets over the treetops and give yourself over to the beauty of this moment. See if in some way you can touch that all is well, even with your difficulty and question still there, not yet resolved. You must, of course, maintain your strength, your clarity, your purpose to resolve it. But you do not need to waste your energy in frustration, fear, and anxiety about it. Breathe in the beauty, the serenity of the moment. May I open to this moment just as it is. And now gently return to your body in the present moment. And bring some slow movements to your hands and feet and take your time to open your eyes. And she finishes this with a Plum Village song that goes, "And when I rise, let me rise like a bird joyfully. And when I fall, let me fall like a leaf gracefully without regret." So that comes to the end of the reading and the meditation.